You're listening to FemMonk. I'm your host, Katie Davey, and I'm on a mission to raise the policy conversation around gender and inclusion. Today, we're talking about participatory democracy. I'm joined by Yash and Nam from EverySay to talk about what participatory democracy is, some examples of participatory democracy, and how we're doing here in Canada, and what we can do better. I hope you enjoy. Thank you both so much for being here today. I'm really excited to have this conversation. I think I'm going to learn a lot, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Before we really dig in, I'm actually just going to get you both to introduce yourself. So, Nam, maybe if you could start.
Absolutely. Again, my name is Nam. I'm a political organizer and an activist. Really interested in municipal stuff and a lot of the cool things that are happening in cities around the world.
Cool. And my name is Yash, and I am the founder and CEO of EverySay, where, of course, Nam and I work together.
Amazing. So, yeah, today we're going to talk about participatory democracy. I'm excited again to dig into lots of examples and really unpack what that means. First, I'm actually, just so we're all on the same page, going to ask you to give a high-level overview of what participatory democracy actually is.
That's a great question. And actually, participatory democracy, I think, is pretty broad. Really referring to any system where people are engaged ongoing in policy and political decision-making within a government. So in contrast to what a lot of us are used to, which is representative democracy, where we elect one person to do that kind of work on our behalf, any kind of participatory democracy is where people are engaged in policy. They're moving forward decisions and plans and strategies and sort of collaboratively coming up with solutions and ideas for addressing societal or economic political issues that they may face.
And what makes you personally so interested in participatory democracy?
I've been sort of politically minded most of my life, really interested in following the news and politics and government. And then where I really, really kind of got into this idea was actually during the Occupy movements in 2011 and seeing people in the streets and the show of force, but then the sort of deeper, more intimate work of having ongoing general assemblies and meetings in public spaces, talking about issues and talking about, you know, a plethora of ideas on how to address things. And then also, you know, the intimacy of living together as well and having people sort of collaboratively think about what a mini society could look like. And then that carried on, you know, the years later in my work. But again, here in Toronto got amplified when I was working in Scarborough and just seeing communities and really primarily young people in communities that were very firsthand taking on social issues that were affecting them, whether it be safety, whether it be educational stuff, employment, entrepreneurship, and actually just getting out there and testing ideas and being bold enough to put solutions into the mix. And so I've definitely come to this place now where I see no reason other than political will that people can't be engaged on the daily in talking about policy and political decisions that need to be made and actually be right on the front line of sort of moving our governments in the directions that they want to see.
Yeah, you said a lot of things there that made me really kind of think about, this broader conversation. And I think it's really important that you mention also the Occupy movement, because I think there's such a generation of folks that were so impacted by that movement. I was actually just this past weekend talking to my partner about the Occupy movement. So he actually graduated with an economics degree in the middle of the financial crisis. So not great timing. but so for him as well, like the Occupy movement was really, I think, kind of the first kind of grassroots, like hold power to account sort of coming of age movement. And I think that that has impacted the way a lot of folks have kind of come to the last decade or so. I'm happy you brought that up. I also like what you just said about, like, there's no reason why people shouldn't be fully engaged in policy decisions. I think that's interesting because one of the things I've found, even just, you know, doing this podcast, when I started the podcast, I actually kind of, it was a bit of out of frustration about the lack of these kind of deep political policy conversations happening, and particularly the lack of kind of a gender and inclusion lens. But what I soon realized is it actually wasn't necessarily that people were purposefully not having them, but rather the way we were having them was not accessible, and people, you know, mainstream media and others just actually didn't know that they weren't like doing this work in a meaningful way, if that makes sense. But so I think, yeah, like that kind of has reminded me again why it's so important to have these conversations in an accessible way and not kind of just at that super high policy wonk level with all of these words that nobody understands. So Yash, how did you come to kind of be involved in the idea of participatory democracy?
It's funny because obviously Nam comes from a very deep, like, political campaigning, canvassing. Like, he's done a number of things in that space. For me, as I think I mentioned to you earlier, I was working in the blockchain space. And these ideas of participatory democracy are also extremely prevalent in the blockchain space. And it's one of the things that the first time Nam and I met, we kind of got super excited about trying to bring some of these things to light and to life even through the technology that we're building. For me, it was, I did not know anything about politics. I did not know anything about policy, how the process works. I was really overwhelmed with just the sheer number of egos and people you kind of have to familiarize yourself with in order to be able to understand how decisions are made at the provincial level, at the municipal level, whether it's, you know, education cuts, that's happening at the provincial level. And, you know, just to be able to wrap your head around who are the parties involved, who are the people involved. It was just a lot. And the stuff that we were talking about in the blockchain world was, hey, you know, we have all these amazing technologies. Everyone has these extremely powerful devices in their pockets, these smartphones and laptops and tablets. Why aren't we using these to get opinions, tangible opinions and votes from people on issues? So that's kind of where I came at it from. We started playing with these ideas of people voting on issues and creating really powerful tools that allowed people to vote on various policy ideas at the community level, city level, national level, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's such, again, kind of like relating to that accessibility piece. Like, if citizens can't interact with decisions in an accessible way, then they're just not going to. So I love that technology lens, because you're right, like, we've got these tools at many of our fingertips. So how can we kind of marry the two ideas? But I guess, yeah, participatory democracy is more than just an idea in many places. So, Nam, you've worked in or have experience with Barcelona. Would you mind telling me a bit about what they are doing on the participatory democracy side and kind of what that has looked like and what your experience has been there?
Yeah, absolutely. So Barcelona back in 2014, early 2015, they were really seeing a lot of the same issues that we've seen sort of around the world, really affected by the financial crisis. And as we talked about before, with the Occupy movement sort of spawning a lot of similar social movements, this idea of like taking public spaces. And one of the big sort of galvanizing issues for Barcelona was their own housing crisis, being affected by tourism and lots of evictions and just the idea of housing being out of reach for so many people. So there were a lot of movements happening already that they were able to sort of turn towards electoral politics, the municipal government. And what they did was they created a movement where they began to host meetings across the city in public squares, sort of emulating that General Assembly that we experienced at Occupy, and talking about issues in the city and actually going out on a process of regular meetings of neighborhood groups and policy groups that were taking this very raw feelings from people coming out to these public gatherings and turning them into lists of demands, lists of priority needs, and then eventually into an actual election platform. They formed a brand new party with support from progressive politicians and activists and lots of organizers in the city. And they went on to run this very sort of people-powered grassroots campaign where they championed this crowdsourced political platform that they had developed with citizens and went on to win. They have a slightly different model here in Toronto. You know, we don't have parties, and so we don't really have a kind of system that reflects like how parties win, but there they have a like a proportional representation sort of model. So there are a number of different parties that got seats, but this party, Barcelona in Common, won leadership, the first female mayor in Barcelona's history as well. And I think the interesting thing too about this that I didn't mention up front was that this idea of sort of consensus-based and collaborative election campaigning and policy platforms was rooted in this idea of feminizing politics. And recently there was an interview with Jody Wilson on TVO where she was sort of alluding to this as well, that, you know, in a lot of cultures around the world, this idea of consensus-based versus majority rule is the favorable one. And it's often a model that comes with women being in places of not necessarily power in the way that we think of it, but influence and guidance and leadership. And they wanted to put that sort of at the very forefront of their new party. So it was based on this idea of confluence and consensus. I was really fortunate to go and help on the re-election campaign, which happened just this year. And it was very close. They ended up getting back into power again. So they're into their second term. And really taking on these ideas that they're governing for the people built their platform, the people ran as their candidates. So it's not completely an abandonment of like this representative model that we're all familiar with, but it is sort of a bump in the direction of getting people more engaged on a regular.
Almost a supplement to the current system.
It's a really good way of putting it.
And I think another example we could probably talk about that Naim was mentioning to me earlier was Markham in Canada. And I think, you know, participatory democracy doesn't have to be, you know, necessarily as broad as getting different stakeholders at the table on policy issues. Like that's obviously kind of, I guess, the holy grail in a sense for participatory democracy. But maybe you could talk about the way participatory democracy even worked in Markham.
Yeah, Markham, I think that this is sort of a really great first step for how we might think about introducing these ideas in Canada. But Markham actually just started with the idea of voting remotely online. And they introduced that as one of the options. You'd still mail in your ballot or go to the polls on election day or advance polling, but they added this online option in 2003. And since then, it's stayed an option for them. Their voter turnout has gone up 10% in that time. And it's really interesting to note that in a couple of those municipal elections, like other cities in Ontario, voter turnout went down and theirs continued to go up. Mm-hmm. And last year during their municipal election, 91% of people living in Markham voted online at home, at their computer. And so it's really this like baby step towards accessibility and bringing your government into your home, figuratively and literally. And so, yeah, I think it's like it's a really cool sort of step in that, because that wall has been taken down for hopefully for the government to continue to put stuff online and give people more and more options to engage in their local government.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, it's like I even think of just in this federal election, having more advanced voting days, and one that particularly fell on a holiday. Advanced voting went up by, I think it was 25% or something since 2015, which that again would be another example in a way of creating these more accessible options. And you see other countries where election day is a holiday. It's like, again, when we talk about just those smaller barriers that could have a huge impact at allowing for citizens to, to participate in a more meaningful way that works for them as well, right? Not kind of playing by the rules that are set out. So we talked, I guess, just briefly about an example in Canada, but oftentimes when we talk about participatory democracy in Canada, the kind of shining example that always gets pointed out is the Citizens Assembly in BC looking at electoral reform. But I always struggle with this because it's always pointed to as this great example and the great work they did, but it's not like nobody else has really adopted that. Like, it seems to be very concentrated. I think maybe BC had a second one as well. But so I'd love your thoughts on that, like why that sort of model, if we keep pointing to it as a glowing example, why has it not necessarily been scaled to other issues or even to other provinces? Or again, are there other things that could do a similar thing when we talk about specifically kind of policy rather than voting?
So I guess actually one of the things I'd love to just add on that point is I think we could definitely talk about like Citizen Assembly, really cool example. But it's funny because at least my perspective on this would be that there's a lot of such public consultations or events of this nature that our local governments do put up. But in our experience, you know, we've been attending a number of these events to try and understand how people are engaging in this very physical medium of showing up to a rec center or a middle school gymnasium or what have you, where you meet and talk to all these people. I think one of the limiting factors there is the fact that it is so physical. You know, the fact that you have to show up to this event and I think it may be a little bit difficult to kind of pull this sort of participation off on a regular basis, just the physical nature of it. But it is as you know as well, it is there. There are, for example, Sidewalk Labs in Toronto right now, there's a number of public consultations that are happening for that as well. But there is a predominantly specific demographic that's showing up to most of these events. And in our experience, it's typically people that are a little bit older that seem to have maybe the time and the resources to be able to show up to these events. It seems tricky in that it's hard to capture a lot of people through these very physical events.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, particularly in your kind of, traditional consultation model where it's like, okay, everybody come out from 6 to 8 and we'll talk about this one thing that we already probably have our minds made up on.
Exactly. It's like 6 to 8 on like a Wednesday night and like if you can't make it.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's like, oh, you have young kids, can't come. Yeah. Oh, you've got to work. Sorry. Yeah, no. So I think those are lots of barriers. And I totally agree. And again, like when I was working in politics in New Brunswick, we would see that. And I think the other thing you kind of see in those public consultations as well is, and I think that this is not a bad thing, but you'll see groups on one side of the issue really mobilize and come out and then dominate the conversation, which again, like it's an area, it's an avenue for their voices to be heard, but it does detract a little bit from being able to have like that really nitty gritty policy discussion. But I think what was so interesting, like in the BC model or that the one citizens assembly, I guess, was that they you know, kind of did that random lottery draw. It was basically like selecting a jury and then kind of gave them the power to come forward with a proposal. So I think that is very much is a different model than what we see. But I think it's hard. It's like really hard to do that in a good way and probably costs a lot of money too.
And the other thing too to like think about when we think about the consultations that we've probably all been to is they're usually municipal. And like, where are the avenues to actually give some sort of consultation or give feedback on like big federal policies, right? Like all of the biggest sort of election issues, immigration and economy and housing, climate, all of these things that are sort of dominating this election. I think for most people, they just assume that there don't even exist channels for them to leave a comment or like suggest to the government an idea on how they could address. And so I think one of the biggest barriers that, in what we're doing at Every Say, like I'm putting my thoughts and energy behind is actually getting people to feel like their opinions matter and that whether or not they are, you know, a transit expert with, you know, 2 master's degrees or they're somebody that rides transit every day, they have like a wealth of experience and how to actually like translate that. It's not that people's ideas aren't valid. It's about like, how do we build a process that lets people's ideas that, I mean, they often come out in a very like raw, unfiltered manner because most people aren't politicians with PR experience. So like, how do we get those ideas translated into policy? And that's one of the things that I think we're really working towards here with Every Say is just the simple ways to get ideas and suggestions and feedback on policy in a way that a politician or some sort of like department or division in government could look at that and say, oh, okay, you know what? These are all really great ideas that I could actually add into this policy now that I have to write. So that's a big step.
And And we could even touch on, so obviously we're in our early stages still, but there are some really cool projects out there, really cool companies and organizations that are doing this rather successfully. And sadly, they're mostly out in Europe, not in North America, not nearly as prevalent in North America. And there's an organization called Citizen Lab, and I believe they're from Belgium. And they basically have this platform that they've implemented in smaller cities in Belgium itself. They've even done things in Vancouver and a couple other parts of the world where they basically implement a ideation tool working with the city. And it's a platform, it's a web platform where you go online and whether it's climate action and you can ideate around like what are the things that you think are the most pressing or what are specific issues that you're seeing that as a city we should focus on, and then you can go and vote on things that are being ideated by your fellow citizens, and whatever bubbles up is then shared with the public and with the decision makers. So there's things like Citizen Lab, there's another project called Console Project, I believe, and that name could talk to it a little bit more, I think. And there's a few others like this, Polis, POL.IS, Polis, yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff that is already happening. And I think, yeah, we would definitely want to bring more and more of that to Canada.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned like that ideation reminded me of, and I think this also happens a little bit more at municipal levels, but you hear of municipalities kind of putting a pot of money aside for like participatory budgeting, basically, and kind of doing that same thing, like kind of having... having meetings and whatever to kind of decide where this money could be best spent. I think, and that does happen a little bit in Canada. I know actually in New Brunswick, the city of Dieppe did that. I don't know if they're still doing it, but they definitely did it at one point. And there would be, I'm sure, lots of other examples. But yeah, I think that's kind of another, almost like even a way for governments to see that this is like a safe thing to do. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like creating that confidence and creating like removing some of those barriers again by like not having catastrophic experiences like they might think they're going to.
Yeah, there's actually another really great, and I think this is like key to moving us in this direction, is just like taking these smaller bites out of the behemoth that is government and politics, and figuring out how to implement things that are very tangible and action oriented. And there's another great example I just want to reference really quickly in Taiwan. Again, this is like birthed out of like protest and occupying public spaces a number of years ago, and the community, the protest community were using digital platforms to not only like, you know, organize and plan and chat, but actually to crowdsource and critique and build up ideas that they were sort of pushing to the political parties that were trying to win the election. And a fairly progressive party ended up winning. And seeing the value of this like super organic grassroots policy engagement that was happening, they chunked off one policy that they essentially handed to this group of activists to engage citizens of Taiwan about. And it was on how to license Uber and Lyft and taxis, like, you know, how to deal with this this disruption that a lot of cities faced. And they used an online tool called Polis, and they built this process of getting very raw feedback, finding points of consensus, building lists of priority like policy ideas and solutions, and then like gradually going from mass engagement down to much smaller, structured, focused, like meetings with experts. And the outcome of this was actually they developed their policy for how to regulate ride sharing companies. And so this is like that same sort of idea around participatory budgeting, but actually creating a policy. And so we would be very excited to even see one level of government take on that idea of, you know, we want to build a climate plan or our transit plan for a city, like something that is sort of succinct and tangible and focused enough that they could play around with this idea of online participation.
And I just want to add one piece out is, I think, at least in my understanding and my approach to the way we're kind of building out our platform and how I understand our system here, it's gone from this kind of techno-utopian idea of, oh, we can kind of get everybody on the table using technology, and we can kind of really mitigate the people politics and really focus on policies and create things that have a very, very direct impact. But I think with all these ideas, one of the most valuable things that we can achieve most immediately is changing people's sentiment. And this goes back to kind of what Naeem mentioned earlier, is like, if people feel empowered, even if the action they're taking on such platforms or through such organizations, even if the actions don't have tangible outcomes, I think just bringing people, like letting people feel that they are, their voice is being heard or they have a way to convey their message, I think that in and of itself is just super powerful and probably the first step that that can have really meaningful ripples as people feel empowered. They talk more about these issues, and they talk more about these issues in a meaningful way where they're not just complaining and not just being frustrated about the people in power, but rather they're starting to ideate and think about tangible, rational kind of issues or options that they might have and you know, the government might have that they can take.
Feel like that is a great leeway into talking about, so this episode, as you know, we're recording a few days before the end of the federal election, but it'll be released after the election wraps up, right. And it's highly possible that we will have you know, a minority government that will have to kind of work in a more collaborative way, not only inside of kind of the House of Commons, but perhaps outside to, as you kind of said, like engage citizens and like kind of get that support. So I'd love to know your thoughts on like what some of the first steps could be for a new federal government to engage citizens.
Well, I think like having a minority government in and of itself is a great first step because, you know, all of the news clips and any kind of press and media that we see our government talking about policy issues, they're going to see debate happening. They're going to see either successful or unsuccessful attempts at working together and collaborating. And so I just think like moving away from a majority government that has an agenda and a platform and it can push it out with no hesitation, I think is a great first step, just seeing that on our TVs. And then, you know, I think one of the things that would be great is for the parties to really see the value in changing our electoral system and moving towards something that, you know, could be ranked ballots as a very, very preliminary first step. It could be something really robust, like having proportional representation and just having more diversity in the House of Commons. It's going to be great.
I think some of the cool ideas such as that we've been talking about recently is what, like, for example, proportional representation, ranked ballots, etc. But even the idea of what if we even consider this idea of bringing down the age for voting from 18 to 16, for example, I think some of these ideas will bring a lot more people to the table, especially young people to the table inherently. Whether it's proportional representation or bringing down the voting age, these are things that a lot of young people are kind of rallying behind. So yeah, I think it'd be really cool to see the government at the very least playing with these ideas or letting us kind of ideate on these ideas a bit more.
Yeah, and then like you know, in a minority government, I would really hope that MPs take it as an opportunity to go back to what their primary job is, which is to represent us, yeah, and not to represent their party and their party's platform to us.
Yeah.
And so not being able to sort of steamroll ahead with any government's sort of majority platform abilities and powers, I think is going to be great. We talked a lot about like where we're seeing engagement on the local level. And I think that municipal governments are really the best place for people to get engaged in more daily policy decisions, because let's face it, you turn on your taps for water, you take public transit to work. So the policies that you could be working on or thinking about commenting on are things you're seeing every day, which I think is really valuable. Yeah. And so one thing that we would really love the government to do is to look at giving municipalities more autonomy and more power. This idea of charter cities is something that has been talked about here in Toronto a lot recently, especially since the cut to city council that happened last year. So like just bringing cities sort of up to our 2019 standards of, you know, what government looks like and what the roles that cities have in policies and in the future of the country. So I think that also would be like a really great step. And then you would be able to have municipalities like Markham, like Vancouver, like Toronto, that are already trying to tackle this issue of giving people more of a voice and giving people more accessibility to government, give them like really robust opportunities to let people get engaged in local politics. And I think that that is going to have a ripple up effect on how people think about provincial politics and inevitably what they think of federal politics, and that their voices really matter and that their opinions are valid.
I love it. So much to think about. I think we talked about so many really interesting examples and so many potential next steps in this conversation. And I think I learned a lot. So thank you both for sharing that with me. I guess I would ask if there are any kind of final thoughts or anything we didn't get a chance to talk about that you might want to let our listeners know.
Yeah, let's get more people on the table. Let's build more things and have more of these conversations that allow for more people to feel engaged, even if they at the very least feel engaged. I think that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, and I'll add to that and give a shameless plug that you know, we're building this platform called Every Say, and that is entirely our intention, and our goal is to bring people closer to local government here. Yeah. And also help local politicians make better policy decisions based on people's engagement. So check out our platform. We hope that people find it an interesting way to learn about policies and local issues, and a great way to share their opinions.
Thanks so much for listening. As always, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FemWonk. You can email me directly, katie@femwonk.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review. Thanks so much.